Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.
Kaya Talk.
Kaya Talk. How much more?
On the street.
Information does anybody need?
On the air.
Well, that brings us to our favorite feature, the book feature. And today we are speaking to the author of a memoir called On the Stage of Time. And her name is Sikosi Mji, who is on the line with us this evening. Thank you so much for making time for us. And you're welcome on Point of View.
Good evening, ma'am. Thank you for having me. And good evening to your listeners.
What an extraordinary book. I was telling my colleague earlier on, saying, you know, it's books like these that help us remember how we got here and the struggle and the sacrifices that many everyday South Africans have made. And this story was such a story where one gets to reflect on just how much the sacrifices were of those who came before us and got us here in the first place. What was your own personal motivation for writing this memoir?
To start with, it was the fact that I'm still being accused, I hope not anymore since I've written the memoir, by my family of having disappeared without a trace. I feel sad that my poor parents died before I could write the memoir, especially my mom. She just couldn't believe that I could have been involved in politics. So as far as she was concerned, some man had brainwashed me and told me to go with him somewhere. And I really would have loved Mom to read this book. And she was a reader, by the way. We used to share books.
Yes. No. It's quite clear that she was. And quite a quite a strong person, it seems to me, when you speak of her own journey. This was a very determined young lady in her early career days. And you dedicate this book to her as well, which I thought was quite a wonderful way to remember her. She became a doctor, and that journey was not easy.
No, that journey was difficult. And as I say in the book, we were the collateral. You know, it cost us a lot, because Mom was angry that she had been made to have children while she was still trying to be a doctor, studying to be a doctor like her husband was already a doctor. And unfortunately, that anger, I think I felt the most. I felt like she was a reluctant mom. She had had children at a time when she wasn't ready. And she became ready later on, you know. If you see how she spoiled my two younger brothers, my brother and I, those of us who were born when she was still at medical school, really, we didn't get a good dose of that love and affection that, you know, parents should give to their children. And I feel sorry for the young girls today who are at school, 10 years old, 11 years old, and they have children. I actually feel more sorry for their children, because it's a painful thing to be a reluctant, parent as your parent.
You know, you... And I don't know whether this is something that you constantly reflect on or whether you're still there, but you make the point that yourself and your brother were obviously casualties of this tension between your parents about their different stages in their lives. And you say they never reckoned with that. They never took the time to understand your pain as children and how you are affected by the difficult choices that they made, even though, you know, maybe they needed to do what they needed to do as adults.
Certainly, and for good reason. You know, we now, post-apartheid, have the luxury of looking back, you know, and saying, I wish this had been done differently. But I remember we were away, they didn't know where we were, they were worried about us. Mom came to visit me. She was shocked. We had to chew for bread in Zambia. When she asked for butter, I said, what is that? Where will I get butter? So, you know, the typical South African who's used to going to the shop and finding things in the shop. And then after that worry, when people began to disappear and to be killed as well as the excursions into the neighboring states. Now they started to worry about us being killed out there. So for them, there was never a time to reflect on those very personal situations that they had gone through. And now we came back, and that was now a celebration. You know, and we were alive, and others had died, and you know, so they died during that time, I must say, of euphoria about the new South Africa. They had not yet found the time to reflect about, you know, what they did right or they did not do right, you know, in terms of our upbringing. And of course, they were not brought up like that.
You know, one of the things that I reflected on is, apart from your own personal circumstances, so your own home circumstances, just how much this government destabilized education for young people, you know, and the difficult choices that parents had to make. As I'm saying, I want to park your personal circumstances, but essentially every parent wanted their child to get good education not be, you know, under this Bantu education. And it was difficult for young people.
Very difficult, very expensive financially and emotionally. Because there's a story when I went to colored school, you know, first in Coronationville, Johannesburg, and then I stayed with Mr. and Mrs. Motsamaia. I must have been 5, going for 6, and they named me Daphne Sharp, because Mrs. Motsamaia was a colored, you know, from Sophiatown, married to Ntate Motsamaia, Omgay. And her children, whom I thought were her children at the time, and now realize they were her grandchildren.
Yes.
They went to colored school, you know, at Coronationville. So I had to join them, because at that time, my mom had left my father with me and my brother. And I think he just couldn't cope. So he took me there, and he took my brother to another family, the Noah family. And staying with that couple and going to colored school meant that the next time I went to real school, I must still continue in colored school again. But I was miserable in colored school, you know. I had to play colored,
There was also the little matter of when you were moving back and forth, you know, Sesotho, you had been to Lesotho as well, back here again, and then, you know, whether you can carry on with the language and those difficult decisions and how you then get to choose which school do you go to because of the moving around.
Yes, but I must tell you, Pamela, the thing about learning Sesotho from that time when I went to Lesotho until matric, that I will forever be grateful
for. It seemed like it.
The hardship that it came with. Because I am culturally so emotionally grounded. People ask me, Marwana Hansenke Umoyu? And I'm saying,
And I was going to say, but you know, pardon me if I have to say this, just from how you describe what that particular era did for you and what the land of the Basotho did for you, in your soul, I think you are a Mosotho. No. You seem to have totally fallen in love with...
And that brings me to a second reason for writing the memoir. I am so disappointed in our country and the curriculum, which I must really go to the schools and check for myself. Children don't learn their languages. I have a niece who writes children's books in Sesotho. She doesn't get bias. And I'm like, but the children should learn their own language at that early age. You see what I mean? So it's really sad that the cultural aspects that was fortunately kept during apartheid, we are also losing. And not because it's expensive or anything. I think we're just careless. I think we've become so complacent about what a democracy or freedom means.
I want you to, and I'm glad you've pointed that out, but I was going to ask you even a broader question of clearly your trajectory to moving to even higher spaces in government. And of course, you know, your involvement in Mgundo Wesizwe, skipping the country and all of those things. And your reflection now, when you look at what we could have achieved, what we have achieved, where we still need to do better.
I don't want to be unnecessarily harsh on us, because I tend to see a gap in our analysis where we think that we are alone on this planet, we South Africans. We think there's no fight back. We don't think that because we did what we did, that somebody is not happy with that and is crushing it. But I'm sure in the current era of Trump, it's obvious for everybody now.
Yeah.
But for a long time, it was not obvious. You know, people would talk as if being in government means now you are a god, you can do what you like, you can point, you know, things in any direction. And then another thing we also forget is how we got here. You know, this compromise thing, this thing of sitting at the table and negotiating and having big business, you know, being at the forefront of this negotiation. This thing of Mandela being visited there for so many years, 3 years and so on. Mawini refusing to go and sit there with him and saying, they are going to be putting, you know, these listening devices up on things that we didn't know were happening, but we heard they were happening. I mean, the whole way this whole thing was structured. And also, you know, you are negotiating from a position of weakness. You are outside the country. Mm. This somebody must allow you to come in. Look at my difficulty in coming home just because they refused me indemnity. Mm. You know, and I wasn't alone. And then when you are already here, like Chris Hani, they go and they kill you. You know, and you think you've laid down your arms, you think you've made peace. And this is one side that South Africans must never forget.
Mm.
I'm currently reading a book about the theories of race science.
Mm.
And this thing is deep. You know, this thing about us being inferior and so on. It's very deep. We must never lose our guard. We must always be on guard, knowing that somebody doesn't like it if we succeed.
What surprised you the most, that you may not have necessarily shared in the book, but what surprised you the most about being in government?
I wasn't very surprised, but I was rather taken aback.
Mm.
When I joined government and we had to tussle Limabur. You know, Mabur were still in charge, but they wanted things to be done their way.
Mm.
We fought Limaburu, I'm telling you, from the time to join the Department of Communications until the time to join DERCO. I remember I decided to make it my weapon when I argue with Limaburu less about Limhubona Dinto in the New South Africa version. I would just say to them, because there'd be other staff members, junior especially, I'd just say to them, but which flag are we really discussing under? Because they'll tell you, like, no, we've had relations with Kenya for the last 8 years. Which 8 years? I mean, are you referring to 8 years under this new flag? Kapa Uwaka 8 years. And only then would you see them, like, sitting up. But it wasn't easy. It was tough. The battles were left to us to finish off. You know, in the workplace, just like my children tell me, you know, both my children work in corporate. In fact, all of them, all three of my children are in corporate. And they tell me all the time about the racism, the nepotism, the prejudices, you know, against them. And they feel like we didn't do as much as we could have. And I tell them, we also had to fight those same struggles. And I don't know if you can go anywhere, my children, and not have to fight those struggles. And South Africans think that somewhere else is different. I have traveled. I have traveled. The world is just against you, black men, black woman, who wants to excel. You have to double up. You have to just do.
Writing the book in a way cathartic, or was it more painful to go back and scratching those wounds?
No, it was both, my dear. I wrote a very long book, which was about 500 pages, which I called an autobiography, before my niece, because I said,
You need to edit it down.
Not because she's Barbara. Before she's Barbara,
yes.
And another lady who writes children's book, Lurato.
Yes, Lurato, beautiful writer, yes.
Exactly. Before they said to me, no, nobody's going to be interested in such a long thing.
You did well. 290 pages is not too bad.
Yeah, 270-something if you leave out. Yeah, no. So I really had to shrink it. And when I asked someone who is a good editor to do that, she said that's the most difficult thing.
It is.
It's your story. So you know where to cut, and where not to cut. But if you ask me to cut, I might cut the very thing that you want to leave. I decided, by the way, I read all of Maya Angelou's 7 memoirs. So I realized that she had themes for each one of them. I said, okay, I'll choose this one because it's so relevant to my trauma in terms of the family saying I disappeared, they don't know where I was. It's so relevant to my trauma of my children's friends saying to me, okay, you did all this. How come we don't know about you? And it's so relevant to the things I hear people saying on the radio, which are based a lot on ignorance and people not reading and people not finding out. And also on the curriculum that our poor children have been fed, which is so distorted, which is picks and chooses certain things and does not really give a clearer picture, and a more balanced picture of what actually, happened. So I just know I owe that. I owe that to the youth to say to them, actually, I can be one person, but I think there's a 500 or 1,000 more other people we experienced what I experienced.
Absolutely.
Not in exactly the same
Absolutely.
Way, but in more or less the same way.
People can get the book now. It's in stores. Maybe, give us a sense of if they wanted to get in touch with you directly, can they do that or should they just go to the relevant stores?
They can get in touch with me directly. I can give you my email address, which is my surname.
Yes.
Starting with my surname and then coming with my name at gmail.com.
Oh, excellent. mjisigose@gmail.com. That's where you can maybe reach out and get the book. Congratulations. It was quite a wonderful read in the sense that it was difficult to put down, but difficult at times, but necessary, a necessary kind of pain.
And they can also get it at Melville, at 27 boxes in Joburg.
Yes. No. We actually have those contact details and what we'll do, we'll also share them on our social media platform as well.
Yeah, and then because I'm invited tomorrow at Rose University,
yes.
They asked that Van Schalk buy the book. So I think all the Van Schalk bookshops should be having it.
Excellent. Well, congratulations, and thank you so much for talking to us this evening.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Former diplomat. Thank you. A former diplomat and author of a book called On the Stage of Time, Sikose Mji. And you can also get the book from her directly, Mji Sikose, Sikose, @gmail.com. That brings us to the end of the show. I'll be back tomorrow at 8.
Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.